Look far. Verse 22. We studied yesterday, and he began to say unto them in verse 21, this day is the scripture fulfilled in your ears. And all bare him witness and wondered at the gracious words which proceeded out of his mouth. And they said, is this not Joseph's son? And he said unto them, you will surely say unto me this proverb, physician, heal thyself. Whatsoever we have heard done in Capernaum, do also here in thy own country, or thy country. The word bear him witness, it's used in, it means to be well testified of, to of good report. In Acts 6:3, it's of good report. In Acts 10:22, it's of good report. Acts 16:2, it's well reported of. And they wondered, and that's what the word we studied before, thamazo. It means to marvel or hold in admiration. And the gracious words is charis logos that came from his mouth. So here we have this guy that all these people, he was, this was his synagogue. This is where he had been going since he was 12. All of the people in the community knew him well. And they'd all heard that he'd done these crazy things in Capernaum. And everybody now was anxious to hear him. So at the first start here, he's saying all these wonderful things. And then a few scriptures from now, they're going to want to throw him off the cliff. So they wonder for a minute. And then when it sinks in about who he is and what it means, you want to kill him. So. And he spake unto them, and he said unto them, you will surely say unto me this proverb, physician, heal thyself. Whatsoever we have heard done in Capernaum, do also here in thy own country. Proverb is just parabola, means parable, or figure, a type. And it's used all over the scriptures as a pattern, as a figure, as a type, as a parable, as a trope. We had a visitor here the other day, and he was, it's still hard for me to understand what he was doing, but he was wondering, going around the city trying to figure out where the gates for the city were.
For Dallas?
Yeah. Because of that proverb about you shall possess the gates. Hmm. I mean, not proverb, but the Old Testament talking about that. And that's what he had done. He had literalized the parable. And anyone who literalizes the parable, by definition, is a Pharisee. And so the scriptures about Pharisees, and scribes and all that, those really bad ones, go to him or to anyone else that literalizes the parable. Now that's why Israel itself is a parable. The temple was a parable. The Holy Land was a parable. And so all these people, there's humongous amounts of money made by taking Christians to the Holy Land. And the Jews love it because it brings humongous bucks to their economy. But it's literalizing the parable. I mean, people can go to Israel if they want to, but not to see anything special. That piece of land is no more special than any other piece of land because it was a parable and the parable has been fulfilled. Anyway, so that's enough said about
it's
that.
It's all history.
Huh?
It's all the history of it.
Yeah, but it's history. But if you go there with the purpose of feeling the presence of God or something, then you're literalizing the parable. And that's what these people that make money from the tours to Israel, they capitalize on that. I didn't read it, but Barry sent us an email about how much money they are making on these Christian tours.
Yeah, 400,000 people a year from the U.S. They're making a lot of money.
Benny Hinn takes 3,000 people a year there.
Billions, yeah.
So there's billions of dollars at stake here. And as we've talked about, I think it's called the Jerusalem Foundation, has raised in excess of $8 billion to rebuild the temple, literalizing the parable. All right, you're doing something.
Oh, just the extent of that and how much is put into it, the energy.
Yeah, just think about U.S. foreign policy that we talked about the other day. Since 1948, the Jewish lobby and the Christian, the right wing, the evangelical Christian lobby, have created a political system that's based on literalizing the parable. And so it's huge, right? It's everywhere.
Yeah, that's what Freda Lindsay used to make a lot of money out of that. Those who bless Israel will be blessed, whatever.
Yeah, it's
a fundraising phenomenon.
That's Hebrews 12. It's, I will bless them that bless thee and curse them that curse thee. I will bless them that, remember we studied this many years ago, literally it says, I will bless them that bless thee, but I will bitterly execrate them that consider you lightly. And so you can get scared. The hell can get scared. You spend all your money because you don't want to be bitterly execrated. So you give all kinds of money. And it's just a lie. I mean, it's another one of these lies that's accepted all over the world. The brotherhood of man, the fatherhood of God. Israel is a holy land. It just goes on and on and on and on. Anyway, you don't want me going on another rant, so I'll behave myself. Physician, that's iatros. And it comes from the word iomai, which means to heal. But here he uses another word for heal. He says, heal thyself. Heal is the word therapeu, which means to serve as an attendant, to take care of the sick, to be a servant. It's like a nurse is a servant to the sick. Whatsoever we have heard done in Capernaum, do also here in thy country. Capernaum is a... I think it comes from the Hebrew, but it's Capharnaum, and it means literally a village of comfort. Let's go to Matthew. Let's see what he did in Capernaum. Let's go to Matthew 4. Starting verse 12. Now you remember Capernaum is on the sea. It's called Gennesaret. This ocean is called, or the sea is called Gennesaret, or it's called the Sea of Galilee, but it's both the same. And it's where Peter's and his brother's house was. And apparently it was a pretty, they think they found it in Capernaum. And it's where Jesus lived much of his ministry. He lived in the house of Peter. And it's right near the ocean. I mean the Sea of Galilee. And it's really a neat place. But anyway, Matthew 4, starting in verse 12. Now when Jesus had heard that John was cast into prison, he departed into Galilee. And leaving Nazareth, he came and dwelt in Capernaum, which is upon the sea coast and the borders of Zebulun and Naphtali, that it might be fulfilled which is spoken of by Isaiah the prophet, saying, "The land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, by the way of the sea beyond Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles, the people which sat in darkness saw a great light, and to them which sat in the region and in the region and the shadow of death, light is sprung up." From that time Jesus began to preach and to say, "Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand." And then look down at verse 23. And Jesus went about all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom and healing all manner of sickness and all manner of disease among the people. And so that's what they want to... Let's go to Matthew 11, too, just a minute. Just to see it's not all good for Capernaum. Look in verse 20. Then he began to upbraid the cities wherein most of his mighty works were done, because they repented not. "Woe unto thee, Chorazin! Woe unto thee, Bethsaida! For if the mighty works were done which were done in you, had they been done in Tyre and Sidon, they would have repented long ago in sackcloth and ashes. But I say unto you, it shall be more tolerable for Tyre and Sidon in the day of judgment than for you. And thou, Capernaum, which art exalted unto heaven, shall be brought down to hell. For if the mighty works which have been done in thee had been done in Sodom, it would have remained until this day. But I say unto you that it shall be more tolerable for the land of Sodom in the day of judgment than for thee." Now, what does this mean? He went through Capernaum in that area. He's living there. And he healed a bunch of people. Did a bunch of miracles. But they still believe not. I mean, the miracles, you understand why he did all the miracles. He healed all these people. Then why didn't he heal everybody? He raised a few from the dead. Why didn't he raise everybody from the dead? He fed 3,000 once or 5,000 another time or something like that. Why didn't he feed everybody forever? And the issue of this is, and you have to get this in your mind, otherwise you'll be deceived by these signs and wonders. He did it so that he knew that he had the power to do it. It was about him and God, the reason he did it. And that, because you can't be tested by something you don't know you possess. And so he had to know that he could do all those things in order for him to have the test be any meaning, that he would empty himself of all these things. Now this, we think about this just exactly opposite. We think that healing a bunch of people is going to bring people salvation. No, it doesn't. Look at Capernaum. Anyway, you understand this? What?
What do I understand?
This whole idea about why he healed. And
all that, yeah.
All right.
I'll tell you one thing that I can't get out of my head is how the prophet's not accepted in his own country and his name. And he read that out of Isaiah, and they were, you know, later kick him over the cliff. It's like everybody's looking for Messiah at this time.
Just as like they are now.
Yeah, but they just didn't want it to be him. You know, this is Joseph's son. He can't be Messiah.
Well, plus they wanted him to do, Remember, the reason that I got to quit doing that. You tell me that. You did that. It's breaking my.
Basically, he's telling them that he's not going to do miracles, not going to do a bunch of miracles in their presence because they wouldn't believe anyway.
Well, he did a bunch of miracles in
their
presence.
But he did them in the next county.
Oh, yeah, we'll see that in a minute. No, but what did you just say? I confused myself.
You interrupted yourself.
Well, they wanted Messiah, but they didn't want him. They wanted
the
idol.
They wanted the Messiah that would do what they thought Messiah should do.
Right.
Kick some butt.
And
they still do. That's why the whole idea now of the second, quote-unquote, second coming of Christ is the same thing. They want to take over the world and do all this stuff. Well, that's not going to happen.
Right, but it's like we're not looking for the weak Messiah. We're looking for the power.
And remember, the reason, or it's speculated, nobody knows for sure, but the reason that Judas betrayed him, because Judas was a zealot before he became a disciple. And the zealots had one function, and that was to kick out the Roman Empire from from Israel. And he saw he wasn't going to do that. And that became the issue of his betrayal. And every one of us will deny him if he doesn't do what we think he should do.
Yeah.
All right. Back to Luke.
That's like the wisdom of God right there.
And he said it, where I said it, no prophet, blah, blah, blah. Where are we? I confuse myself.
23
If whatever whatsoever we have heard done in Capernaum, do also here in thy country. Thy country is that word. It's one word, patris, which means your native place, your city of birth. And Jesus essentially was saying, well, anyway, we won't go into that. All right, next verse. And he said, verily I said, where am I? I'm so confused, I can't
24.
Now in 24. Verily I say unto you, no prophet is accepted. Yeah, okay. In his own country. Accepted is that word we talked about, dektos. But we talked about it. It has something to do with, and we listed all the ways that we were accepted in the kingdom and all that. Country, or his own country, again, is this patris, this city, his area of birth. I tell you the truth. In verse 25. Truth is, in Greek, it's aletheia, A-L-A-T-H-E-I-A. Remember when we've studied Abraham many times, but the reason Abraham was so critically important, you know, we've said and we've talked about, there's only three monotheistic religions in the world, ever have been. There was a brief period of time where there was the Egyptian pharaoh became monotheistic for a few months and tried to get the Egyptians to do it, and they said, no, we're not going to do that, and they overthrew them. And all the promises of God are through Abraham. That's the basis of the three monotheistic religions. The Jews believe the promises went to Isaac and his descendants. The Arabs, or the Islam, believes that it went to Ishmael and his descendants. And the Christians believe that it goes to anyone that accepts Jesus as his personal Savior. But Abraham was so important because he was the first man in history that I'm aware of, and I really looked into this a long time ago, that had enough integrity to define truth for all time. And truth has to be something that doesn't change with time, doesn't change with place, and it doesn't change with circumstance. And so his definition of truth and what he did to cause that to be manifested in him is why I call Abraham the perfect Christian. Because he had enough integrity to just say, I'm not going to do that anymore. He saw the mystery. I mean, he saw something that changed with time. He said, I'm not going to do that. That's not worth giving any importance to. And you remember in the hall of Nimrod in the temple, they had 500 gods. And a god for everything. It's not as bad as it is in India. India has over 2.5 million named gods. And Abraham was so infuriated by the hypocrisy of all of these different gods and different value systems that people were mistakenly giving value to and giving breath to, that he went into the great hall that had all of these 500 gods. He took an axe handle and destroyed 499 of the gods, and then took the axe and laid it in the arms of the god of that age, which is Taurus. As we said, the head of the head of a bull and the body of a man. And because of that, and Abraham, remember, when it says that Terah, his father, was an idol maker in Genesis, it doesn't mean that he carved little idols. It means that he was the high priest. He was the one that defined the idols. Nimrod had no child. And so according to that, the law of that empire, the next in line in succession was going to be the son of the high priest, which was Abraham. Abraham gave up being essentially God of the world or king of the world by his act of going through and destroying all those idols. Now, you have a great, in your head, there's a great hall. And it's got all of the idols that you grew up with and you were taught. And they're carved round about in your head. And they define what you think is good and bad and what you think is right and wrong, what you think the right way to do things. And just as Abraham destroyed those idols, you must destroy every one of those idols in your head. And the only way you can do that is with integrity. And that you don't be satisfied with limiting the parameters of your value system. You extend the pegs of your tent and the ropes of your tent to the very edge of time and space and see if the value of that idol or value system that you have has any meaning in that extension. You have to push everything to the limits. And if it changes, if what you are giving importance to changes with time and place and circumstance, then you're a fool for giving it any breath. Any importance whatsoever. Now, with that as the definition and the test, there is no opinion that you can have. There's no political system that has any merit. There's no financial system. There's no value system that has ever been that has any merit. And so that's the only way you can empty the temple so that the rightful king or God can be sitting on your temple instead of you. Now, I promise you, this is not an easy task. It'll offend everybody. But the destruction of idolatry is the main job of a preacher. What? Let's go to Ezekiel 8 a minute.
I always think of this, for me, it's better in terms of Board of Elders. That,
we're getting to that.
This is really the Spirit of God showing Ezekiel what goes on in every man's temple. In verse 7, and he brought me to the door of the court, and when I looked, behold, a hole in the wall. Now, you've heard me say this 100 times, but it's saying it for the benefit of the little machine here. Every time, from the first sense of awareness of self, there have been millions of opportunities where you saw a hole in the wall. Every time you failed, every time you were in shame or embarrassment, every time that anything that happened to you that you didn't want to happen, that was a hole in the wall. And what you've done, and what all men do, is you don't do what Ezekiel did, you cover that hole so that your value system can stay intact. Do you understand what I'm saying? So now, and then he said unto me, Son of man, dig now in the wall. And everybody, I promise you, I'm not going to dig there. No, I'm not going to dig in there. I'm going to cover that sucker up. And he said unto me, finally, you dig. Son of man, dig now in the wall. And when I had digged in the wall, behold, a door. And he said unto me, go in, and behold the wicked abominations that they do here. So I went in and saw, and behold, every form of creeping thing, an abominable beast, and all the idols of the house of Israel portrayed upon the wall round about. And every human being that has ever existed since the day of the fall, since the day of self-awareness entered in, has this same crap in their head. And you must penetrate that wall, and you must see if any of those value systems that you so dearly love have any merit in regard once you've extended the tent. The pegs of the tent to the time, and so that they have, promise you, nothing has any value. Well, anyway, that's enough of that. I wanted this part to be for Gary, but since he's got an important telephone call. All right, back to Luke. We're talking about truth. So let's first go to Romans 15. No, that's not. We don't have time. If I get into this one, we'll be here forever. Anybody have anything else? Anybody ready to go in and destroy all that crap in your head? Take a big guy.